You're listening to This Song, the podcast where artists talk about the songs that formed and transformed them. I'm your host, Elizabeth McQueen, and this week on This Song, we are going to hear from Mary Claire Glaser of the Austin band Shy Beast. But before we get started, I want to let you know about what's going down this weekend on KUTX, the radio station in Austin, Texas, where we make this podcast. Because, you know, it's cold, or at least in the 50s and 60s, which is what we consider to be cold here in Austin, Texas. So this weekend, we are encouraging people to hang out under the covers with us. And by under the covers, we really mean we'll be doing a whole weekend of cover songs. That's right. Starting Friday at 6 p.m. and ending on Sunday at 6 p.m., you will hear only artists covering other people's songs here on KUTX. You can tune in to KUTX at 98.9 on your radio dial here in Austin, or you can get our app on the App Store or listen online at kutx.org. Now, to Mary Claire from Shy Beast. The band is our Artist of the Month here for January at KUTX. Artist of the Month is a cool feature we do here at the station where we focus on one Austin band each month. We play their music. We have them come perform in Studio 1A, which is our live performance studio. They host a My KUTX guest DJ set, and they do this song. We're basically all about them. And for the month of January, we're all about Shy Beast. The band plays this hooky, synthy, undeniably poppy dance music that we here at KUTX obviously love, hence their Artist of the Month status. And Shy Beast? Well, they're kind of a new band that's like been around for a while. They used to perform under the name MCG, but recently they changed their look, tweaked their sound, and changed their name. They became Shy Beast. I got to talk to frontwoman Mary Claire Glaser earlier this month, and she told me about a band that helped her understand that change could be a very good thing. In fact, this band has been giving her musical inspiration for like most of her life.
So I picked three songs because that's really a band that changed my life, and that band is called The Cardigans. The first song is called Celia Inside, and it's from, I think it's their first album, yeah, ever, called Emmerdale. I remember hearing that song and thinking it was the most beautiful song I'd ever heard.
You don't want the sun to shine.
When I was really young, my mom would listen to bossa nova music while cooking. It had that kind of beat, that kind of cadence to it, you know. But then it took a step further. Like it had that kind of dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, like that kind of beat to it. I was honestly 6 or 7, like I was really young, but my older brother, you know, was already deep into the Cardigans at that point. He let me, I don't know if it was my CD player, I probably didn't have one yet, he would let me borrow his, and he would let me listen, when he was at school, he would let me listen to some of his music, and he, you know, handed me the Cardigans, like, CD. He's like, I think you'll like them, because it's a girl singer, and she's got a pretty voice. And I was starting to kind of like hum and sing to myself in my room, and he kind of noticed it. And I think he just like wanted to like foster that, you know. He's 7 years older. So at that point, he was in middle school. He formed a band in sixth grade, like first day of school. My family moved from one school district in Houston to another, and he didn't know anyone. His friends like still talk about how throughout the day, he would walk up to people like, can you learn how to play this instrument? You know, like, I'm forming a band. Let's meet at my house, like, this weekend. And he was that kind of instigator. And they played, like, you know, at the school Battle of the Bands, like, they're in eighth grade. And that same band went on to, like, continue to play and tour until like after he was in college. So he definitely had very unique tastes. One of those bands is The Cardigans. And like, I think he tried to emulate or sort of imprint everything he loved about music onto me when I was really young. I think out of anyone in the family, I'm the most like him. His name is Evan. We just sort of got along. We kind of, without having to talk about things, we understood each other. And I think one of the things that he noticed is that I was able to hear a song and then pick other bands or other artists or other sounds and be like, this sounds like this. And he was like, you're totally right. Like at a young age, I think he noticed that I was able to make references or talk about music in a way that he didn't expect. And so we were able to start a conversation about music, and that goes deeper than just the song, but how it was produced and, you know, or that guitar style sounds like this person's, or it was almost like we were brothers in a way, if that makes any sense. Just like nerding out about music. Yeah, it was really cool. And she will not get bothered at all. She's just watching the water and fall. So you should give them just what they need. Water on the tree.
And did you come from a musical family?
Yeah, so although my dad never went on to perform professionally, you know, he was super involved in theater and acting and singing and vocal performance when he was younger and growing up, but then became, you know, a defense lawyer, like went to law school, did the whole kind of old-fashioned route, and was tormented by that choice, like felt like he had missed out on his true calling. And so because of that, he really tried to, you know, get us to be on the track to do that for ourselves. So instead of having a dad that was like, you're going to grow up and be a lawyer just like me, like, you're going to grow up and you're going to be a star on Broadway. And it was very overwhelming for me because I was so shy and didn't feel the need to, like, sing for people. I just enjoyed it. I just enjoyed appreciating it and singing for myself. But he was my vocal coach. And my mom, just like her mom, they're amazing pianists. So she could play anything. And so we would get the music for, you know, more complicated songs from Stephen Sondheim's work. And he would make her sit down the piano and would call me downstairs no matter what I was doing, no matter what time of the day or night. And we'd start with vocal lessons. And I'd have to sing until he felt like it was, you know, I'd sung enough. But my dad was sort of head of the household, and everything had to go his way or else it was not a good day. And so we were all kind of at the whim of living out this fantasy that he missed out on. But I also bought into it. I also, at a certain age, was like, yeah, I'm good. Like, I can... You know what, if he hadn't been so insistent with me, I probably would not have pursued it. I wonder if I had, you know, if I wouldn't have pursued a performing life, because I was that insecure as a kid. I don't remember a time when I was confident as a really young child. And so I think it really took someone every day, like, fighting for me to jump out of my shell, even though it was a little... You know, the methods weren't so great probably now in these days, but this time. But I do appreciate it. I think I owe a lot to my dad, you know, and my brother, you know. So, yeah.
Well, and what was the music that you got from your brother or in the Cardigan song? And I might be wrong about this, but it seems like there's two things going on. Like, you're getting this really heavy, intense education that you didn't necessarily ask for,
yeah,
from your dad in like musical theater and vocal technique.
Yeah.
And then you have your brother and you having a real solid connection,
yeah,
around music that you really do enjoy.
Yeah, I couldn't wait for him to get home. I was at school for not as much time as he was. Like, he'd have like sports practice and he'd get home and instead of like closing himself up in his room, like he would kind of bother me. He'd be like, hey, MC, like like, I need you to listen to this song. You know, it was real. And I didn't realize, like, everyone was, your brother, you're so close. And I was like, yeah, it's just normal. But I do realize, like, how much he had a hand in my, you know, musical education.
So you should give them just what they need. 'Cause she will not bother at all.
There was something kind of spooky about her vocals. There was something sad about them. And I was definitely kind of a sad kid. I mean, I did not have happy parents. So, like most of us growing up, there's always something going on in the family, something that you don't know how to explain, because I did not really talk a lot. I was pretty much a mute for a while. So I connected with kind of the subject matter, even though I didn't really quite understand it, because there's more mature themes in the music. There's a sense of sadness in it, but a freedom, because she had this lightness to her voice, and it was charming, and I thought it was pretty. And I imagined myself as her. I was like, I want to grow up and I want to be like this. I want to sing songs like this. I want to be able to sugarcoat something that's kind of sour and make it beautiful. And I was like, even being sad and watching my parents like fight, you know, or my dad be overbearing, like, I still have this outlet. And I was like, that's good enough.
Were you also playing instruments back then?
So this is funny. We were never allowed to quit anything in my family. And so everyone had to take piano lessons. And I was deep in the piano lessons. And I realized that I had a severe issue understanding and using my left hand with the bass clef. My older brother and sister were so good at reading music. And I was not. And so I cried and cried and cried, and I would freeze during piano recitals. And so I begged my mom to quit, and it was like the first time anyone in our family had quit something. And so I was very afraid of picking up an instrument because of having the same issue. My brother tried to teach me guitar when I was probably 9, and I was too embarrassed. But when he would leave the house, I would try to play it. I tried to learn by ear, but I was not going to be put in a class. You know, I was not going to have someone teach me because I was too afraid of not being perfect the first time, which is what my dad kind of expected of me vocally and just in general. So I didn't start picking up guitar until I was 14. And my friend who was in orchestra, I was like, oh, you play guitar? We were having a sleepover, and she was like, oh, I learned how to play Kiss Me by Sixpence None the Richer. And I was like, that's an awesome song. And she was like, it's really easy, I could teach you. And I was like, okay. And so it was sort of with a friend, with a non-threatening performance, you know, kind of environment, that I learned how to play it. And the next day, I talked to my mom, and I was like, I want to get a guitar, and I want to learn. And she was like, you're going to give it up, just like you did piano. And I was like, I promise I won't. And I was like, but I'm going to learn myself. And so we bought books, and I locked myself in my room for like weeks. I mean, I ate dinner and I went to school, but I just taught myself. I learned my own way, and it took forever, but I ended up learning how. And that was around the time when I started learning my favorite songs, when I got better at it, I started trying to write, you know, and that was, I found that the guitar was my instrument to really kind of embody this new Cardigans thing that I had left when I was a kid.
And around, was this around the time that you heard that second Cardigans song?
Yeah. Okay. So I really had kind of hung on to that album Emmerdale and the album, and then their following album Life. And I kind of like let go of the Cardigans. You know, I lived my life, I explored other music. I was my age for a while, like I listened to what was relevant. And then my brother was like, hey, did you ever listen to First Band on the Moon? And I was like, no, because at this point he was in college. He was like, are you kidding me? And I remember listening to it and being like, this is dark. I picked Been It, and because I think that song represents the album First Band on the Moon really well.
Baby boy, your face is pretty and your life's a toy. Master man, I'm never better than your latest plan. Poor Donnie.
The Cardigans is still holding up their pop essence, but they're kind of changing out the true popness for something a little bit darker, a little bit more abstract in their and jarring. It's like Nina is singing sweetly, but the words she is saying are kind of bizarre. She's like, I've been your mother, your father, your sister, your whore. I've been your mother. Feel like I can talk about whatever I want as long as I sculpt it in such a way where I'm deceiving someone into thinking that they're listening to a happy-go-lucky song. Make a song, create a song that they can dance to, and then sneak in, you know, these themes. You know, it's like having a secret message that you're hurting, you know, or that something's messed up in your life, and like sending it in a bottle, you know. And that's kind of what I appreciated about it.
Sweetie pie, I'm your personal pro, you know. You know what number to try when to cry.
And also, it's not just her singing or the way the song made me feel. It's also the instrumentation will just come in and surprise you in their songs, and especially in that song, the chorus comes in. It's not quite what I would have expected to happen. I'll think that this song is going to continue in a happy way, and then they'll introduce this really jarring theme that makes the song, that makes them the Cardigans. And I don't really know how to explain that because I'm not much of a music theorist.
I think I know what you're talking about. There's this guitar riff that goes dun 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 dun.
As a Cardigans fan, up to that point, I was already like on her side in a way that I was like, oh my gosh, like I want to be a passenger on this journey. You know what I mean? And I was like, I want to write songs like this. And so in a way, the band's maturing kind of paralleled just my growth as a person and being able to harness themes, like darker themes that I had felt, you know, especially growing up in my family and just life. Around the same time, I discovered the song Hanging Around from the album Gran Turismo. I definitely am an anxious person and can worry myself into a knot and can obsess over things. And that song has a ticking sound that goes through it, like tick, tick, tick. That song builds so much suspense and nervousness for me, and it almost to the point of like, I can't handle this any longer.
I wonder what it's like seeing through your eyes. You offered me to have a try, but I was always late.
It's so insistent. It's one of the most insistent songs that I've heard from them. And then at the very end, there's just this like guitar experience. Like the song just exploded. And I still listen to that song when I think about having just an instrumental bridge, like what it could possibly be. Like if there's no lyrics and it's just the instrumentation, and if it's something that just sort of like blows your hat off, you know, and then it comes after that moment, it just comes back to that kind of nervous, like ticking. Whenever I get panic attacks, I think about that song, because everything has to have a point of release, like everything has to explode, and it's okay, and you can do it in a safe space with instruments, like you can do that in a song. And so I think I felt like the Cardigans were right there with me during like my struggles, and they still do. Yeah.
So around this time too, you're like late teens and you're hearing these songs in the Cardigans and you're writing your own songs. Are you playing the songs that you're writing for people other than your brother?
Yes. When I was a senior in high school, and I wrote a few songs, and I played them at the talent show. And I just kind of came out on stage with my friend Maggie on the cello. She was the person that first played guitar for me, that taught me how to play my first song on guitar. So she's heavily part of my journey, I guess. And we started playing at this place called Super Happy Funland in Houston. Then college happened, and I was like, oh, great. Now I have to meet people and, you know, try to do this, which was hard. My first year of college, I didn't really perform much, but I wrote, you know, I don't know, 20 songs. That was like my most prolific stage ever. And I sent my brother these songs, and he was like, these are okay. I want to work with these. And he was like, we should record these. And my sophomore year of college, he called up Lars Goransson, his friend and a producer here in town. And we recorded like 6 songs. And my brother and I, and then a few other musicians that like he just like called in favors because they all knew my brother. We just like recorded like this, I don't know, 6 song thing. And Lars Goransson was the engineer for Gran Turismo.
Whoa!
So he spent a lot of time with the Cardigans. I freaked out.
I bet you did.
And he was like, I was singing into this mic, and he was like, you don't want to sing into that mic. That smells like old man British teeth. And he was like, here's Nita's mic. And like, I was like dying inside of ecstasy. We formed a band around my first EP, with some local musicians. Jay Cizek, who's the bassist in Shy Beast, was in that.
Whoa!
Yeah, and a few other people. Then he's an actor, so he got a job and he moved to LA. And I wasn't really ready to like be a band leader. I was like a sophomore in college, and I was just painfully shy and awkward and insecure. And it was up to me to like figure out how to pay them and figure out how to get music, you know, space. And I was not ready. I was not ready for the Austin music scene. I was like deep in college, and I just wasn't ready. I don't know why. I let it fall apart, and I'm so mad, but whatever. It's all water under the bridge now.
And at what point did you want to put together like a band that made pop music?
The year after I graduated college, I had so much material, and I sent it to my brother. He was like, okay, we have to make an album now. And so we called up Lars, and my brother and I recorded an album together. And we didn't title it, we just had it.
Everywhere I look, people are holding hands. What does it feel like? I need to understand, I must have forgotten.
And 3 years went by, and he's like, you got it. He's based in LA, he's like, you gotta do something. And I was like, but I wanna be in a band with you. He was like, move here. And I was like, you could try to be an actor. And I was like, I can't. I'm too afraid. I would be eaten alive in LA. And then I thought I was going to move to New York to pursue dance. And then I was like, I would be eaten alive in New York, you know? And I did a Rockettes audition, and I was like, this isn't for me. And I came back, and I was like super depressed and really low self-esteem. And my brother was like, call up David, which is like a good friend of his growing up. Just call him. And and I was like, okay. And he actually called David, and David was like, that sounds good, but she needs to call me. I'm like well into being an adult. Anyone else in the system, anyone else in the music world would have been like, she does not need to do this. Like, she doesn't have it, right? Like, she would get eaten alive. I eventually like called up David and Andrew, who, it was funny because I was actually like playing music at a church locally, and Andrew started going there, and I met him, and he was like, I have a band, and I went and saw him play, and I was like, do you want to be in my band? And I sent him the album. I was like, oh God, what are you gonna think? And both of them were like, yeah, this sounds good. And I was like, okay, we have 3. We tried out a few, you know, drummers and bassists, and just for scheduling and moving away, it didn't quite work out. So for like almost like another year. Like we didn't have a real band, but we still like put out a music video, released some of the songs, and then we finally formed the band with Jay Czek, who is the original member of my brother's band, Two Guy Trio, who was the original member of the first band that I was in, and then Drew Silverman, the drummer, his wife Allison Dolan and I are in a we're in a dance company together, and he's an amazing drummer, and we were like, all right, let's do it. In our first practice, we're like, what do we call ourselves? And I was like, I don't know, and I literally couldn't make my mind up, and we weren't really agreeing on anything. They were just like MCG, like sort of her initials, and I'm like, yeah, we could make it like Magical Cat Grenades, like who cares? And we had that for like 3 years. 3.5 years.
And there's other MCGs in the world, right?
Oh, so this is like when Instagram was still kind of like not quite as all-encompassing. And so when hashtags and things like became important, after a show, I'd be like, oh, let's see if anyone took pictures. You know, hashtag MCG. And it's just thousands of pictures from cricket grounds in Australia. It's called MCG, M Cricket Grounds, and it's a huge stadium, and it's just pictures with, like, game day t-shirts on, of, like, girls, like, you know, with the peace sign and, like, you know, big cups of Coke, and that's MCG, and there's a director in Mick G, and it's just the worst name to try to have as a band. I wish we could start over.
Like I said in the intro, the band changed their name from MCG to Shy Beast. And as Mary Claire told me, there were a number of reasons for that.
We realized that we were kind of plateauing. We had gained a following, locally kind of, but we didn't really have a clear look. A few people just that we respected in town, they're like, what they thought. And they're like, one of them was like, hey, have you thought about changing your name? And we were like, oh. And they were like, what about like rebranding or like trying to find a look that's more distinct? You know, doing anything that sets you not above but apart, you know? Just make stronger choices. It was sort of up to me to come up with a name, find two words that fit together that you don't usually see together and that are also kind of autobiographical. And
so how did you settle on Shy Beast?
At first I was like, what about Mini Beast? That's a band already. I was like, what about Shy Beast? I don't know why I wanted the word beast. Like, who am I? We're not like a metal band. But also, Shy Beast kind of fits me. Like, I'm painfully shy sometimes and socially awkward. Don't like to look people in the eye. But when I'm on stage, it's sort of, it has that rage quality that, like, that I, you know, that the Cardigans music has.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, it, like, when you say Shy Beast and then the way that you talk about the Cardigans, it's like, oh, that's that thing.
Yeah.
That where she's sweet, but she's saying something really cutting, or
yeah,
it's both poppy and kind of like metal,
yeah,
at the same time. I can feel the fever in the moment. I feel more alive. I've been speeding faster than a bullet. With a new band name also came a new band dynamic, and Mary Claire decided to take on more of a leadership role.
I've been talking about how I'm insecure. Like, if I could just perform and write music and not have to do any other part of anything, obviously that'd be easy, but I have to be more. I have to be a leader. I have to make decisions. I have to, you know, be adamant and make people want to follow me. And if I don't make clear decisions, then it's all going to be muddy and we're not going to go anywhere as a band. Honestly, it was sort of me asking them to trust me for a year. And I think I was like, hey, we clearly like didn't quite achieve something bold enough. And we all felt that we needed some new wind in our sails. So I was like, what if I kind of like tried to step up and imagine what it would be like to be a real band leader, and which means just being more demonstrative on stage. I think branding was a big part of it. Feeling like we had something real and tangible to show people and to share. We switched producers. The producer we worked with previously, we didn't really get a chance to work deeply with him. It was like more of just a short, it was like an EP that kind of captured our live sound. But for the sake of just starting over, we just turned to someone else. And that was Danny Reich. And we, I think a large part of our new change was the style in which we recorded our music. It was much more synth forward. And that really did kind of move us into a different realm. More poppy.
What a way to the oceans, the mountains and the canyons, 'cause I don't feel so small with you. There's so much out in the cosmos, but I don't need a telescope to see the heavens in you.
Like someone called it escalated evolution, as what we were going through.
And you've got a band that's kind of one of your North Star bands that went through kind of a similar thing. Like they evolved.
Yeah, I think their path has shown me to not be afraid of like going in a direction for a whole album. 'Cause I'm a people pleaser, and I don't. You know, when you're trying to please, like, the local community sometimes, I mean, how weird it was for us to change our name even to, like, you know, what if the next thing we record is nothing like what we have out there? Like, is that okay? The Cardigans didn't care, you know? I think the Cardigans have a song for every moment of my life. I think if I had a soundtrack to my life, it would just be Cardigans songs. They make me feel okay about feeling dark. You know, they make me feel, it's like they give me license to be in a certain place long enough to write about it. That's why I love music, really. You know, that's why a lot of people do it. But for me, like, use that torment, use it, and then share it, and then countless other people who are in denial of theirs will come to the surface, you know, which is why I think I'd do this in the first place. So, yeah.
Maybe that hole in my heart doesn't need to find its missing part. Maybe it needs that room to breathe. Leave me be and let me bleed. Leave me be and let me bleed. Let me bleed.
And this is Leave Me, Let Me, from Shy Beast's latest EP of the same name that they released late last year. We actually premiered the video for this song on KUTX.org. You can find a link to that on the show notes page for this episode. And man, I love how Mary Claire has a band and a brother who've helped her find her musical way, like these guides. It's really lucky for her, right? And lucky for us. And like I said, you can find a link to the video for Leave Me, Let Me on the show notes page for this episode at KUTX.org, as well as a link to Shy Beast, my KUTX guest DJ set, and their Studio 1A performance. And as always, you can find a Spotify playlist there where you can listen to all the songs we referenced in this episode all the way through. And that's it. You have come to the end of another episode of This Song. This song is a production of KUTX 98.9 in Austin, Texas. This episode was produced by Art Levy and me, Elizabeth McQueen. Thanks to Deidre Gott and Peter Babb and Todd Callahan for all they do for this podcast. And yes, it is true. Our theme song is Mahout by Austin's own Hard Proof. Right on. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.